Canadian Egyptian Coalition for Democracy held a session during the People's Social Forum just an hour ago. One of the speakers was Roger Anis. Roger is a writer and an anti-war activist in Vancouver. He has written extensively on events in Egypt during the last year. Roger, welcome to our program and thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you. It's good to be with you.
The first question that comes to my mind is, why are you interested in Egypt and why particularly in the events that took place the last year? Most of the journalists shy away from such a tragedy, but you are documenting this and you are publishing on Truth Out and Rebel.ca, and also you have extensive material on your website, A Socialist in Canada.
Well, I think they're very important human as well as political rights issues that have been presented by events in Egypt. We see very serious violations of human rights, and we've seen the basic political rights of the Egyptian people were lost in the coup d'etat that took place last July. So I think that Canadians need to be aware of that so that we can be in a better position to inform our government's policy. Unfortunately, Canada has been supporting this military regime that's come into power in Egypt. And so that's a violation not only of the rights of the Egyptian people, it's also a violation of the rights of the Canadian people, because we have a right, a duty, and responsibility to make sure that the foreign policy of our government is respectful of the rights of other people in other countries.
And where do you get the news from? I know in Egypt now the media is controlled, so what you hear depends on the source. What are your sources?
Well, there for a writer or a researcher willing to do the work, there's quite a few good sources that were being published in English out of Egypt itself or elsewhere in the Middle East. I don't have the list in front of me, but I was able to depend quite a bit on people in the region that were either writing in English or their writings were being translated into English. And then, you could follow the mainstream press, and of course, as in any complex foreign affairs issues, you have to read between the lines in what the mainstream press is saying. You have to interpret it. You can't assume that it's necessarily going to be the exact truth that you're going to read in The Guardian or the New York Times. You have to exercise good judgment. And I think part of the success in correctly interpreting a big event like what's happened in Egypt in the last 13 months is simply applying the good sense and logic that you learn over the course of life and looking at other countries and other parts of the world. You know, it wasn't really very difficult for me to figure out that the overthrow of the elected president last July in Egypt was a very bad thing for the Egyptian people and a very bad thing for a democracy in the world in general.
During your intervention at the session, you made a reference to a report by Human Rights Watch. Do you want to elaborate on this?
Yes, it's very important. Human Rights Watch has published just some days ago, just on August 12th, 2 days prior to the worst of the human rights abuses that took place in Egypt following the military coup on July 3rd of last year. On August 14th, you see, after the coup, there had been ongoing protests in the streets of Cairo against the overthrow of the elected president and government. And one of the largest of the ongoing protests in Cairo was happening in Al-Rabah Square, which is adjacent to the Al-Rabah Mosque. And so that there had been a number of attacks by the new governing regime in Egypt against these street protests, but the really, really bad one occurred at Al-Rabah Square on August 14th. And so the report by Human Rights Watch is 1 year after that event. It's a very extensive report. It's 188 pages, and it confirms that what occurred in Al-Rabah Square were massive and gross violations of human rights, in which more than 1,000 people, probably many more than 1,000 people, lost their lives. So this report is very important for people to read, not only for the facts of that event, but they argue in the report that this was a deliberate attack by this new governing regime in Egypt at the time. In other words, it wasn't a situation that had escaped control, that maybe they had tried to control this protest or do this. No, this was a deliberate attack to disperse this protest occupation ongoing in Al-Rabah Square, and there was no shown concern by the authorities for human life.
The organization Canadian Egyptian Coalition for Democracy is asking, this is one among the different demands, that journalists be granted, Canadian journalists working in Egypt or covering Egyptian events, be granted a diplomatic status to protect them from prosecution. When we talk about that, it seems that people tell us this is far-fetched. As a journalist and a writer, what is your feeling about it?
I think this is actually very important because one of the things that's happened in Egypt, first of all, there's been a sharp crackdown on media freedom in general in Egypt, but this has also affected international journalists who attempt to travel to Egypt to report firsthand. And so, for example, Mindia Benjamin, who is the leader of the Code Pink anti-war organization in the United States. She attempted to travel to Cairo earlier this year, and she was not only refused entry into Egypt, she was assaulted in the Cairo airport by the police authorities and basically thrown on a plane, injured, with her shoulder was separated in the assault she suffered. And so she wrote about that at the time, and she's one of the writers that's written a quite good article on this first anniversary of the massacre at Al-Rabah Square. It was published in Counterpunch. I recommend that article, as well as the article she wrote once she arrived in Turkey following her expulsion earlier this year. She wrote a very good article about what she encountered. And I highly recommend that people listen to the interview that was on Democracy Now! On August 14th, where they spoke to the director of Human Rights Watch. They spoke to a former journalist at Democracy Now! who has been in Egypt and reporting from there for some time, Sharif Abdul Qudus. Yes, and I forget the third guest on the program, but it's an excellent program that was broadcast on August 14th, so I recommend that as well for listeners to read.
Roger Anis, you also made a reference to what's happening now in Gaza. And you said that the military dictatorship in Egypt is not only bad for the Egyptians, but it's also for the Palestinians and, frankly, for the entire area. We didn't have much time to listen to your views during the session, but if you like to make our listeners aware of the connection.
Sure. What happened during President Morsi's short term in office, and I say in office, not in power, because unfortunately the deep state of Egypt never lost the power, as we saw in the coup. But during his time in office, the relations with the Palestinian organizations in Gaza improved, and there were relaxations on the border crossings, you know, which have made life very, very difficult in Gaza, that people don't have free travel through the border into Egypt. So this was relaxed, and the new government under President Morsi was undertaking better relations with the Palestinian Authority in Gaza with a view to long-term improvements. And so that was cut off, the potential for improvements in relations and therefore in conditions of life for the Palestinian people were cut off by the coup last year. So the Palestinian people themselves have suffered by this coup in Egypt. Egypt today could be very outspoken against this latest attack by Israel against Gaza. Instead, it's good if they facilitate dialogue going on in Cairo, but Egypt should be a very forthright voice in support of the right of the Palestinian people and against this terrible violence they suffer from Israel.
Thank you very much, Roger. Roger Anis is a writer and an anti-war activist. He lives in Vancouver. You can check his website, A Socialist in Canada.
Your revolution going in circles daily. Step out your virtual office while we work to get lazy. Having motherless babies, they lift curtains above us. That's why we use our spotlights in the search for their coffins. Live, live from jailbird fathers. Turn us into doves that hail all martyrs.
In the light of day, you are more than just a knight. Seeking for a right away, asking is it just a fight? I feel the winds of change, everything is still the same. Even though I feel the sun, I can only see the rain. In the light of day, you are more than just a knight. Seeking for a right away, asking is it just a fight? I feel the winds of change, everything is still the same. Even though I feel the sun, I can only see the rain.
Yeah. More power to-
Ovid de Bastien is the second speaker on, was the second speaker on the panel organized by Canadian Egyptian Coalition for the Democracy. The panel just ended an hour ago. Ovid Bastien is an author and educator. He lived in Chile through the dark years of General Pinochet. He has published two books, Chili, Le Coup Divin, and Chili, Underside of Economic Miracle. Ovid Bastien, welcome to our show, and thank you so much for being with us.
I'm happy to be here.
Ovid, what similarities do you see between Egypt and Chile as you have lived during the coup?
I must confess that I know little about the situation in Egypt. Although I have covered the, what news do appear in various newspapers. The similarity I see is that the religion is used in Egypt, as it was in Chile, to support a regime that does not hesitate to torture, to imprison people by dozens of thousands, and to suppress freedom of the press. That's something that I see as a similarity between the two.
You talked about the factions that supported the coup in Chile, if you want to recall those factions to us.
The Chilean coup occurred on September the 11th, 1973, and in a sense, it was a coup d'etat that was easy to predict because already we knew, the entire world knew, that the United States had plans to cooperate with the Chilean elite to overthrow the socialist government of Salvador Allende, because the reporter Jack Anderson had come out with secret documents of the International Telephone and Telegraph, ITT, back in 71, showing that immediately following the electoral victory of Salvador Allende in September 1970, there were plans to overthrow him, and that ITT, and with help of the US government, they were willing to support the overthrow of Allende. However, the CIA and the US government advised the military to postpone the coup. They had learned from their lesson in Vietnam that sheer force is not sufficient, and you have to create the proper conditions for violence to be a success. So the plan was to make the economy scream, to blacken Salvador Allende, both in the national press and in international press, to impose financial blockade on loans to Chile, and to create instability, even by exploding gas stations, bombing, creating instability by all kinds of ways throughout the country. And once you have an economy that's screaming, once there is chaos and disorder in the country, then a military coup is welcomed by the people and is perceived as being an act of saving Chile from a horrible situation. And it actually worked out that way. And Chile adopted a very neoliberal economic agenda, one of the most radical in the world. And so that's the story of Chile, and it's really the story of people manipulating a situation for their own interests.
Ovid Bastien, I'm going to ask you to give us some hope, because after all, recently, a few years ago, General Pinochet was brought to justice. And so there was a realization that what he did was a coup, and not only that, but it was a brutal dictatorship. Of course, all dictatorships are brutal, but this one in particular. So do you think that Egyptians should look forward to the time when the military regime in Cairo would be removed, and how would this come about?
What I'm going to say is is a message of hope, but at the same time a message of patience. Although I don't know enough about Egypt to be able to make the comparison, but in Chile what happened, if you look back, for at least 17 years during the military regime, on September the 11th, 73, was celebrated as a day to celebrate the liberation of the country. And after that date, when a civil government returned, people started, on September the 11th, it became a day of mourning and of remembering. And so it took a very long time for the Chilean people to overcome the military dictatorship. It took a lot of suffering, and it took, they did have armed resistance, but I think that one of the major factors was the fact that people who opposed a dictatorship, who opposed the brutal suppression of freedom of the press and of basic human rights, set aside their differences, were able to talk to each other, and to unite in a common front against the dictatorship. And I think that that is probably one of the biggest turning points in overcoming the dictatorship. And that struggle is still ongoing, because the neoliberal model imposed by the dictatorship is still, Chile is still suffering from that model. But we're talking 40 years later. But I think overcoming, like in the session that we saw this afternoon, there were people who had differences of opinion. And the division among people is something that must be overcome to try to reach some unity among those who oppose the brutal repression of people.
Just to ensure a basic human rights.
Yes. And that is not an easy thing to do, because after the coup in Chile, the people who were for the coup thought that Chile was freed, and they denied any violations of human rights, or they just saw those violations as something necessary for the common good.
Pay.
A price to pay, and that's it. Torture. All kinds of torture. All justified because of their belief. And they had a belief, and it took years and years and years.
Well, we hope it's not going to take as long with Egypt. The world is changing, but still, there is hope. We should have hope.
The people are very resilient.
That's very important. I heard once that the people have the power; they just have to use it.
They have to use it, and I think a very important thing is to manage to overcome fear. And that in Chile took a long time, but that was a turning point when, in the beginning of the 80s, they were able to overcome their fear of the dictatorship.
This is all the time we have. Ovid Bastien, thank you so much. You're an author and educator, and our listeners can check your book. There is an e-version, Chile, le coup divin, and Chile, Underside of Economic Miracle. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
In the light of day, you are more than just a night, seeking for a right away, asking is it just a fight? I feel the winds of change, everything is still the same, even though I feel the sun, I can only see the rain. I hit your ride, come, let us fly over Egypt and find peace in our mind, while denying our demons. My life, will you be right there by my side when I see this again? I kiss your eyes so we can fly over Egypt and
Ahmed Kamel was the third panelist during the session for the Canadian-Egyptian Coalition for Democracy. He's a well-known activist from Montreal. He's a freelance writer, and he is a founding member of the organization. He's also professionally an engineer, a very successful engineer, Lead Green Associate and Certified Project Manager. Welcome to our program, Mohamed Kamel.
Thank you, Zama.
During the session, there were analogies with other countries, in particular with Chile. I think one of the very nice features of this forum is that international solidarity. We learn from history, we learn from the experience of other people. Ovid Bastien was talking about Chile with us, and we would like, he said he's not a specialist on Egypt now, you are following the Egyptian events very closely. So what makes you say that it's a bad dictatorship in Egypt, and why are you so angry about it?
Let me say it first, that really I regret that the people listening to us were not with us on the session, because the correlation between the Chile and Egypt was very clear, at least to me personally, after I heard to Ovid speaking about what happened in Egypt. And I heard exactly the same thing going on in Egypt, while just changing the name of the country. And for sure, we're speaking about 40 years apart from both of them. Doesn't mean that the elected president on Chile at that time was the same ideology of the elected president of Egypt on 2013 when he'd been removed from office. For sure not. Both coming from different, completely different ideology, different background. But the outcome of this was almost the same, which is a military coup. And when we speak about dictator, I don't believe that there is a good dictator. The dictators are bad. It's because the notion, the concept of dictatorship itself is not acceptable, especially in the 21st century, because this was maybe acceptable maybe before the revolution in France, maybe. That would be acceptable at that time for the time people. But after this, and especially in the 21st century, you cannot accept to have a dictator who has the right to dictate to people what to do. People have the right to choose. And that is from where come that we cannot really feel that what's going on in Egypt today, with all those bad things going, would be acceptable for any, and has no justification. There is no any reason can it accept.
Except that somebody in the audience made the comment that there were millions of people in Tahrir Square asking for Morsi to cede power, I mean, to withdraw from the government. And they said, well, isn't this enough? This is the will of the people. And in fact, General Sisi, when he came and he took power, he said that he is responding to the call of the people.
The problem with this is that I'm now can take to the street out today, and proportionally speaking, and I'm not going to debate the millions of people because all the calculation didn't say anything, but I'm not going to speak about this issue. People have the right to demonstrate. People have the right to refuse any policy. People have the right to refuse any president or any regime. That's people's right for sure, and we have to respect it. But people on the street is not to elect and put people in power. People in the street is to shape policy. Because when we go to the street to demonstrate for something, we're not going to the street to remove Harper from office or to remove any prime minister from office. We are on the street to shape the policy of this person and to educate people not to elect him next time and to take him out next time. That's what's the purpose of people going to the street. But then if we really people have the will to remove this person, and we at that time, which is the only democratic elected and only democratic vote took place, free vote took place in Egypt, people might have the chance to do that again. But unfortunately, by calling the military to go out, and then Mr. Sisi lied to people from the day one. He said, as you said, I'm here just responding to people, and I have no interest in power, no interest in being president. Everything he said, he did the opposite completely. And now he became the president through a frauded election. He became, which is, we don't consider him a legitimate president, but he is the president, he's the one who governing Egypt now, through a frauded election. And that's sad that to see something like this.
So I understand you're making demands from the Canadian government, our government, and also from the social society to stand in support of the struggle of people for democracy. If you want to elaborate on those demands.
Quickly, I can say that the first demand is going to actually to the civil society before the government of Canada, because unfortunately the government of Canada is taking a stand that shame, actually, we feel ashamed from their stand by supporting or dealing with the coup in Egypt. And we demanding from the civil society the support of the Egyptian struggle for democracy, for human right today. And the main problem in Egypt now, more than democracy, is human right. Because as we saw from the Human Rights Watch report, that it's everything is abused for human rights, even killing people. Massacre took place in Rabaa a year ago, and all this stuff is need to stop. And the only one can stop this is the civil society before the government. And we need to remember what the civil society did on those apartheid regime in South Africa and all those regimes. The civil society who started the movement, and we would love to have the civil society in Canada, all the peace lover, all the human rights lover, support the Egyptian people in this struggle. And then by doing that, we demand that the Canadian government take a stand, actually, which is to the Canadian value and principle, which is when we have Canadian people and Canadian permanent resident being detained in Egypt and being sentenced in Egypt, especially a journalist being, and I'm not speaking about one person only, I'm speaking of tens of thousands on the prison in Egypt, but among them, a few Canadian, that we need to stand up for them. We need to stand up for the Canadian people being killed there, and no one even have an investigation about what's happened on the, on these massacres. And to be honest with you, I'm equalize every single person in Egypt on here, but at the same time, I have to be more, as a Canadian government, need to stand more for its own people. We need the Canadian government to stop dealing with this government in Egypt and to stop selling them armed vehicle and stuff like this, using it in killing people and overrun people in the street. We need the government really maybe to take more a progressive, and unfortunately I ask this from the conservative government, to take a progressive approach to give the journalists a special status, but giving them a diplomat passport or something to give them a protection of the government at that time. We need the Canadian government also as well, and this is actually a very special demand from our side, that we will look forward to the Canadian government to appoint a liaison between the government and us as the ECCD, the Egyptian-Canadian Coalition for Democracy, because we think we are able to monitor and feed the Canadian government with the reality going on ground in Egypt.
When we talk to our MPs, they always tell us, well, let's wait and see. We cannot discount the government as being undemocratic for the time being, so we're going to give them a chance. Do you think 1 year is sufficient?
I consider that giving a chance to people to govern the government who killing people in the street indiscriminately, who are did massacre people, and Human Watch did really name those people, especially Mr. Sisi being named, his Minister of Police of Interior Affairs being named. So those, I don't think that those people deserve any chance. And what a chance can give a people who are really massacring people and torturing people in the prison, having tens of thousands of people in prisons behind bar for no reason at all, having more than, maybe close, not more than 2,000 being sentenced to death for things that we don't understand what it is, being media being silenced. What would be a chance to give a people? A chance might be given to a President Morsi at that time, not to a coup and illegitimate elected government.
Thank you so much, Mohammed Kamel. He's one of the founders of the organization Egyptian Canadian for Democracy.
Thank you, Saman. Thank you for the security.
Change, everything is still the same. Even though I feel the sun, I can only see the rain. In the light of day, you are more than just a night, seeking for a right away, asking is it just a fight. I feel the winds of change, everything is still the same. Even though I feel the sun, I can only see the rain.